This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Bradley, how's it going?
Fantastic, fantastic. We're back again with episode 200, so it's kind of, I guess, in podcast world, that's probably a milestone. I would think, like, there's probably, like, I wonder what percent of podcasts ever reached 100, let alone 200, so that's pretty exciting. Thanks to, obviously, all the anybody that listens, it's fantastic that you kind of take time to hang out with us on most weeks. So appreciate that. Before we get started, we'll kind of want to, like, give you guys a calendar for the shows the rest of the year. We've got a 3-part episode kind of series lined up here for the next 3 weeks. We'll then do a kind of annual holiday show, and then we'll take a couple weeks off for Christmas. We figure a lot of our listeners are off work and traveling and whatnot, and so are we. So we'll just take a couple weeks off. So we'll have shows on that release on the 21st and 28th, the 5th, and then on the 12th, and then we'll be off on the 19th and 26th, best I can tell from my calendar. And then we'll be back again on, like, January 2nd. So we're looking forward to that. So kind of finishing out another year here at Out of School headquarters, so we're really excited about that. And here in the U.S., we're getting ready to celebrate Thanksgiving. And I know, and where you're at, Fraser, that doesn't so I know it's still a sore subject.
We're not grateful for anything over here.
Yeah, we're not grateful for anything except for rain, but which we have none of here in Chattanooga. It has rained. It has been over 100 days, like 140 days here since it's rained more than an inch.
I'm moving to Chattanooga. That's it.
Well, we're in, like, major drought time. It's not good. It's not good for the grass. That's the case. I'm ready for some rain.
Yeah. I was looking at a thing today. There was an article on the BBC which said that Scotland was ranked dead last in a range of other countries in terms of how active our children are. And I'm kind of thinking, it's not really very hard to work out why that is, right? And they were, of course, everybody was blaming computers for it, right? I was thinking, well, maybe we shouldn't keep building your outdoor facilities in a country where it's dark, freezing, and cold for 8 months of the year. I was kind of interested because they said, Scotland was ranked last in terms of screen time. And I was thinking, well, it depends on where you're coming from there, because if you want people to be computer scientists, then surely high screen time would put you at the top of the league, right? So, you know, you have a big push on coding and stuff, and then people complain the kids aren't outside enough. So you just can never win.
Can't have your cake and eat it too, as they say.
No, you cannot.
So one thing before we get started on our topic for today, Google released a cool new app called PhotoScan. Mm-hmm. And the idea is they have this Google Photos product, obviously. And this is an app that's helps you, like, kind of scan your old pictures, like, that you have in a photo album. So kind of be a cool project for some listeners to do over the holidays. Like, I have two albums that my grandmother gave me that's kind of like pictures from my childhood. And so I went through last night and just scanned, like, 50 or 60 of them. Worked pretty well. Quality can be so-so depending on the lighting and the quality of the picture, obviously. And it's not perfect. It's not as good as, like, sending them off to a service to have it scanned. But it was fine. Like, it's good enough to preserve the memories. I mean, some of these photos were taken 20, 30 years ago. Like, how good were they originally?
Yeah, they were never really great photographs. Yeah.
Right. And it was crazy. Like, I basically digitized my entire, like, birth to 18 in about, like, an hour. Mm-hmm. And realized I took more of my pictures of my kids last month than I have basically of my entire life.
Yeah. And the thing that I always reflect on whenever people talk about too many photographs is that When I was at university, I was doing a degree in software engineering, and the only thing that made that different from a degree in computer science was in the final summer before you graduate, you had to do an internship. And I, with incredible good fortune, managed to land an internship with a company in Philadelphia. And I spent the whole summer at age 20, I think I was at the time, in Philadelphia, 12 weeks living over there, working for a company, blah, blah, blah. And it was an unbelievable experience. But when I look back on that, I only have 36 photographs of that whole summer because I had a film camera and you know, I didn't have all that much money. I was spending so much money to kind of live there and so on. And I had a film camera. And the only thing that's worse than having too many photographs of good things that happened in the past is not having enough. And I really wish that I had a lot more photographs at that time because it was an incredible time in life and it was an incredible opportunity. And I only have these sort of 25 photographs, 36 photographs for the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think you can have too many photographs. I mean, I guess you can, but you're never going to regret taking more than you think. I mean, it's just something, that's something, you know, those memories you can't get back. And obviously, as I get older, my memory gets a little fuzzier, and it's nice to have those. And it's nice that I have like a lot of photos from my childhood preserved. Mm-hmm. And so, like, my kids will always have that. So I don't know. Maybe they won't care. I had a couple of photos of my dad in those albums when he was in high school. So I snapped those just to have them. You can never get those back. Those are memories you can't get back.
Isn't it interesting that this is where like digital estate planning becomes such a critical thing? Because, you know, for me, those photos are locked away behind my Apple ID password and two-factor authentication, which is protected by my fingerprint and all that stuff. And it would be very challenging for people to get access to that. But I mean, that's a stock of what? 30,000 photographs documenting the whole of my, well, I suppose, married life, which is when digital photographs first came in. Quite hard to get access to that.
I've got a whole document that my wife has, like it's in with my will, mm-hmm. that explains kind of our photo setup, where things are, where they're backed up. Then that also includes copies of my iCloud and Dropbox recovery keys.
Okay.
And those are kind of locked away as well. So that's, you know, that. And of course, she knows, like I explained to her about two-factor. And so, like, you know, obviously she can, she knows how to get into my 1Password. She knows how to, like, you know, but the text message is going to come. And then, but we've also got those recovery keys. But then I also have a local copy of those, all our photos on my Mac Mini server at home. And then, so I don't know. It's crazy to think about, but that's like the one thing we can't get back. I mean, I had a close friend pass away, you know, 8 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that's something like, when I was helping his wife load, like pull off photos of their camera from their last vacation, you better believe those things were like with 4 different services. They're with Amazon, in Dropbox, they're in Google Drive. I mean, anywhere I can put those photos, because you just don't get those back. And that's something, photo management is something I always care deeply about, because I realize that's the one thing that you can always rebuy movies and books and music, but you can't rebuy photos.
Yeah, there's literally no money in the world that can make that doable again. You can't make your children 2 years old again.
Bingo. That's something. We'll have a link to that app in the show notes. It's called PhotoScan. So if you're going to your grandmother's house or your parents' house this summer or this Christmas or Thanksgiving, that might be a fun little thing to do, is just snap some old photos. The only thing that sucks about them is obviously like it doesn't have the right metadata. Mm-hmm. And so it's like in my Google Photos, I have like a bunch of photos from yesterday that are clearly old, but there's really no, like, there's no way to fix that other than just like manually setting them, and that's a pain.
Yeah, and you don't even know which child you're talking about in the picture, you know.
Bingo. Yeah. So moving on. So what we're doing over the next 3 weeks, we're going to have kind of a Getting Things Done series. And so this week we're going to do a GTD for short overview. Next week will be GTD for teachers. And then the following week will be GTD for students. And we've mentioned GTD or getting things done on this show probably a lot. I mean, if there was an out-of-school drinking game, that would be something that would send you, you need to be drunk pretty quick. But there, when we say GTD, we're talking about really two things. Number one, there is Getting Things Done, the book. And that is a book by David Allen. Then he has a company that's really built around that. And so it was, the second edition was published last year, March of last year. It's Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity by David Allen. And then there's an audiobook. You can get on Audible. There's Kindle books, $13. And then there's paperback, obviously like $10, really, really, really cheap. But so we will probably not refer to the book very much going forward. It'll be more about the methodology that's in the book. But it's important to understand those are two things. But anytime you read about like, this is a great GTD app on the internet, like it's largely referring to the methodology and the theories behind that that are described in the book. And obviously, like everybody has their own kind of forks in it and things that work well for them. And that's awesome. But from here, kind of here on, we're probably going to be talking about the method, correct?
The method, yeah. I'm going to add one other thing, Bradley. There is in existence in certain places in the world another kind of audiobook about GTD called Getting Things Done Fast. And what this is it's about a 7 or 8 hour series of CDs, which you can no longer buy and are very difficult to get even in somewhere like Amazon Marketplace. But a number of people have been able to find them, for example, in their local library's audiobook section or CD lending library. And what this is it's essentially a 7 hour recording of David Allen doing a seminar of the kind that you would actually pay the David Allen Company, you know, hundreds of dollars to go to now. So Getting Things Done Fast is the name of that. And it's wonderful if you can get a copy of it. I've heard it, and it's really, really good. It's very long, but it goes into, it's essentially the seminar version of the book as well. So if you want it, maybe not exactly more interactive because it's a recording, but if you want it more kind of live rather than to read it from the book, see if you can somehow, somewhere, find a copy of Getting Things Done Fast. The David Allen Company doesn't sell it anymore because obviously it would compete with attending an actual seminar, but it's definitely something to be hunted for if you can find it anywhere.
Can I tell you a little secret?
Shh.
I have it.
Hidden away in the vaults.
True story. That was my first introduction to GTD. I listened to that before I read the book.
Okay. It's a great introduction, it is.
Oh, it's mind-blowingly good. You can probably find it. I think when I was like 22 or 23, I think it fell out of the back of a truck, and I grabbed it there. So, yeah, I do have it. It is fantastic. So, there are really five kind of tent poles or pillars that make up GTD, and these are kind of run on, but the first thing is capture everything. So this is your to-do list, your ideas, like things that are recurring in your life. And we'll talk about like apps and services and things like that a little bit, but this can all be done in like paper and pencil too. Like it can really be anything. GTD doesn't have to use a specific app or tool, but we use whatever works best for you. Like I know people that do this in pen and paper, and like if that works for them, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you have to create a system to where you can easily kind of get things into your inbox, quote unquote inbox. Again, whether that's digital or physical, like in OmniFocus, which is a very popular Mac and iOS GTD app, they have an actual section called the inbox. This is like your dumping grounds. And anytime like you think, I need to remember that, you throw it here. You should not be trying to remember things for later. Like your brain is not a memory, should not be like a short-term memory tool for tasks. Anytime you think about something, write it down. So if you're like right now, if you're listening to the show and you're thinking, I need to check my local library for GTD fast, like that would go into your inbox, like check for GTD fast. Is that a good example?
Yeah, that is a great example. And the challenge I think often is to over capture. And then the bigger game is to then have a procedure later where you make sure that you make decisions about those things. And when David Allen talks about an inbox, of course we have our email inbox, which everybody has. But it's important to recognize that there are probably multiple other inboxes in your life as well. And I have right on my desk here an actual plastic inbox that I use for paper and other things. And literally everything that lands on my desk that I have to process goes into that box. And I'm looking at it right now. There's a pile of envelopes and stuff like that. There's an old iPhone 5 that I've got to set up for my daughter. There's the box for my iPhone 7 Plus that I need to put into the attic. There's a number of other things in there. And everything just goes in there. And I have a time in the week where I'll just sit down and systematically empty that, probably scan most of the paperwork and then shred it, and then decide what to do with those other things. But it's also worth bearing in mind that you also have inboxes in places like Slack. Twitter is a kind of inbox that you have no control over. Well, you do have control, I suppose, but you know the kind of things that can show up in Twitter, the kind of, and not so much work, but opportunities that could show up in Twitter are significant. If you're a teacher, your learning management system is an inbox. So, for example, we use iTunes U, and one of my actions every morning is just to go in and make sure that all my iTunes U work is processed. Unfortunately, the current design of iTunes U doesn't do a very good job of giving you a dashboard of things you've got to do, so it really doesn't have an inbox as much as like one inbox per course that you've got to teach. So that's maybe something I want to send to, as feedback to the Apple team. But all the different places where you get things, if calendar invitations are a big part of your life, that's a form of an inbox. Email, of course, if you use Slack at work, Slack is an inbox now. That's one of the reasons why I've actually resisted bringing Slack into school, because I would just end up with two inboxes instead of one. So it's important to recognize all the things that are actually an inbox in your life. And it's not just email. It's all of these things everywhere in your system.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There are, you do have multiple inboxes. And one of the things I try to do is to limit the amount of kind of inboxes I have. Like, I really don't like signing up for new, like, project management tools or things like that. Like, I just want to, I have my system that works well for me. So I kind of resist, you know, always having another thing or another way to communicate, because that's like, you know, even iMessage in some ways can be an inbox. And often I will take messages and copy them into OmniFocus and save them just so I'll have it into one system. But yeah, everything is an inbox, but you do want to have it written down in a system that you trust and that you will process. I mean, because if you just capture it but don't process it, and we're going to get to that in a second, then you're just writing things down. But again, we're not trying to do things here. We're not trying to organize them. We're just trying to get things wrote down or typed somewhere so you will be able to process them later.
I was going to say, Bradley, that the phrase that is often used in GTD terminology is trusted system. And that's critical, because the trusted system that many of us have that we all work with is our calendar. And even people who are really not into productivity are really big on their calendar, and they use their diary, and that's kind of become a tool that is widely accepted in Western business, if you like, and I suppose worldwide now, as being the thing that we all depend on. But it's like having that for all the other things you have to do as well. And one of the key features of getting a trusted system is A, that you'll look at it, but B, that everything is in there. And the difference between sort of having 90% of things in there and 100% of things in there is all the difference in the world. And for me, that's been something that I've learned. I mean, I don't know how long you've been looking at GTD, but I've been doing it for at least 14 years now. And this is one of the things I've learned. And as we go through, I'll share some of the other things I've learned over that period. But that's one of the things, is that completeness actually makes a massive difference. You might think 90% feels great, but 100% feels 10 times better than that.
Yeah, I got started with GTD right before OmniFocus, when OmniFocus was in beta. And so a lot of, you know, just a little GTD app history. Before OmniFocus, there was an app called Kinkless GTD. Am I remembering that right? And it was an app kind of built on top of Omni Outliner that someone had written to basically make it work. And then obviously OmniFocus ended up making their own, which has been well supported for years. And I went away for about a year and been back on it for a few months, and it's really working out well for me. But the next thing is really, this is where you come in and you process everything. This another terminology of this would be to clarify what you have to do. Now, a couple things here. This is when we're actually beginning to organize our tasks and our projects. And so, like a traditional task list, somebody might say, plan new company budget. Well, that is not a task item. That is a project. And there have so many like actionable steps under planning company budget or planning, you know, performance review system, like all that. You have to break it down into what tasks go into that. Because otherwise, like, you're never going to get that done. Like, you're never going to plan the time to plan company budget. You need to kind of figure out what's under that. Figure that out. And then you want to figure out what, if you can delegate it, can you do it right away? When will you do it? When is this due by? And then kind of start to, depending on your system, you'll be able to mark that in, if you're using OmniFocus or Things or any of those apps, you can start to kind of categorize that stuff in there, assigning due dates, assigning start dates. And I'll talk about why I have start dates later. And then you set it up and you trust it and you sync it and then you work off of it. And so you kind of really, the pillar here for me, and this is where the system really works for me, is it clarifies what I am supposed to be doing every day. And I don't have all these little inputs saying, what about the thing you need to do in 3 months? Like, I don't want to worry about that now. So by clarifying when it's due and when it's not due, I can kind of focus better today. Thoughts there?
Yeah. Over the years, as I've been doing GTD, what I've found two things have happened, right? One is that I've gotten better at doing that for basic tasks where the outcome is well defined. So, for example, with our kind of systems administrator hat on, something like a new pupil is starting the school, I need to have an iPad ready and configured for them on day one. So for that, there's a little checklist of things that I'm going to do. I'm going to get an iPad, I'm going to supervise it, I'm going to configure it, I'm going to assign it to a user, put them in the Wi-Fi, put them in the Google Apps, all these different things that I'm going to do. And that's that's become almost routine now, you know. And there's another book that I want to just briefly mention, which is called The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. And that really kind of enlightened me to the benefit of codifying all of that kind of thing in a checklist. So instead of just saying, well, all the things I need to do, let's write that down one place and get it in there. But what I've also found over the years of, as I sort of moved into school management, is that many of my projects now, the reason they land on my desk is because they are ambiguous, unclear, uncertain, based on changing foundations, and just nobody else knows what to do with them. And what I found is that quite often now what happens is I start a project and it says, look into thing, right? And the thing is usually some government initiative, right? But whatever. And until I do that, I have no way to break the project down any further because I simply don't know anything about it, right? And what I'm working on right now is trying to find some way or some kind of practice for doing that kind of project where you have to do a lot of research before you even know the boundaries and parameter of the project. And that's something that is, I find increasingly common in my life, and I don't have a good way to do it. But what I have found is that for those well-bounded, fully understood kind of projects, I can almost template them now. And that's a really interesting thing to think about, is can you take something, even something quite complex, and turn it into a template that you can then use over and over again?
Yeah, that's a great idea. And kind of what I do there, it's probably a little bit lazy. I might say, like, you know, just something that say, if I want to look at something in January, I might put a task list. So let's like on OmniFocus, I might say a start date of 1/3, a finish date of 1/10, like look into X. And then I'll make notes in there. And then I'll decide, okay, what are my next actions here? Like, is it get feedback from others? Is it check out pricing, et cetera? And the next action for me is a great kind of clarifying thought of GTD as like, okay, what's my next action here of this project? What's the next thing I need to do? Yep. And oftentimes there's nothing I can do. I'm waiting on somebody. And so I need to follow up with them. Then I need to, you know, make sure I follow back up with them if they don't get back to me. But it kind of takes those really open-ended projects and says, what's the next action? And sometimes it's like literally like research it and then just say, okay, check about it again in a month and see how you feel. I just, you know, let me give myself a few weeks to ponder on it, but then having my trusted system remind me to think about it again without having to, you know, again, remind myself that in my brain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think what we're starting to get into is we're starting to get into sort of task scheduling as part of the to-do list process. And I think what you'll find is that some people in the GTD world, if you read blogs about GTD and so on, a lot of people are dead against using start dates and due dates. So a start date is when you say, I don't want to see this project in any list that I look at until a certain date arrives. And then a due date is when it becomes marked as overdue or flagged in your system or something. But what I've found as a teacher, and specifically as a teacher, is that if you think about a teacher's day, it's highly structured with a timetable and a schedule, and there's very little optionality about what you do in those times. And GTD initially, back in the early days, I feel was really designed to help people who were quote-unquote knowledge workers, for whom you walk in of a day and there is no structure to your day and you have to make up that structure and do it. And what I perhaps struggled with for quite a long time, and looking back on it, is trying to do GTD in the way that it's described in the book in a world that's not exactly the way that GTD was designed for, which is that complete freedom of action world where you maybe have some meetings, but apart from that, all your time is your own to structure as you want to do. So what I found is that it's been very useful to try and turn my unstructured work into structured work using those due dates and times. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I have free periods or free times in the week, or you know, if there's a day where a class is going on a trip and I won't see them that day, that brings up a new opportunity to put something in there. So trying to turn unstructured work into structured work has been a key insight for as a teacher to help me do GTD better.
Yeah, I am a big, that's one of the things of GTD I love is the scheduling. And especially start dates, because there's so many things that like I may have to think about in the future, but I really don't want to see them now and be using kind of brain power to even read about them. I just wanted to put it in the system and think about it then. And so that's been, even when I was using Wunderlist, like I relied on you know, being able to do that, basically hide tasks until I see them. And one of the perspectives I use in OmniFocus is a do perspective, because I can't see stuff, but sometimes I just want to know, like, okay, what's coming up in the next month? Like, you know, just give me an overview for the month. And then, like, I've got a, you know, a tomorrow do list, but I don't see that stuff today. And then I have it within the next week and within the next month. But yeah, and I think the key here is, even if you don't like love due dates and start dates, find what works for you. I mean, after reading the book, after listening to us talk about it, like figure out what works for you and allows you to get things done, you know, most effectively and on time and with as little resources in some ways as possible, make that work.
Yeah. And I'll give you one example. Just this is actually literally from this morning. I didn't sleep well last night and I went into work this morning feeling like a complete wreck. And I just sat down at my desk and I opened OmniFocus and I have this one project that comes up every morning, which is called Morning Checklist. And it's just things that I do every morning. And I had almost no brain power to work on that. And I just completely depended on, okay, I'm shattered here, but okay, let's have a look at the inbox, tick that off. Let's have a look at email, tick that off. And that just sort of got me over that hump. And I had almost no brain power to apply to any of those tasks, but I got through them and it got me started in the day. And as the coffee started to work and so on, the day got better and we got on and we got through the whole day. But it was very interesting to me just to sort of reflect on a day where I was really low in energy and GTD helped me to get through it and execute and make progress a little bit on each task that I had facing me that day.
I've got a coworker who's just getting started on GTD, and I knew she had kind of just a wild day, and I looked at her and I said, you didn't get anything done today that was on your do list. And she said, not a thing. I said, you know, one of the benefits of GTD is sometimes you just have to admit, I'm not doing that today. It's not going to happen. And punt it till tomorrow.
Yep.
And like in my situation, like if something was due, let's say like something was due today, but it's, I'm not going to get it done. I'm not going to have time. I'll make its start date and due date tomorrow, and then I don't see it. And then I don't feel guilty about not getting it done. Because you have those days where either just like your day falls apart with things at work, or you just have like those tasks that are too brain power heavy, and you've had a rough morning with your kids, you just didn't sleep well, you had a rough night last night, that you just can be honest with yourself and say, I'm not getting that done today. And sometimes that is so freeing to just admit that rather than just like leave it on a to-do list and then never get to it. But you're constantly reminded that you didn't get to that. Where sometimes just saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm done with that for today is freeing.
Yeah. And as a secondary teacher, one of the things I know is that I have days in the week where I am teaching every hour of that day and nothing will get done. And Wednesdays tend to be like that for me, where I have 1 hour before my first class in the morning between 9 and 10. And then from 10 o'clock onwards, I am pedal to the metal for the entire day. And as soon as school finishes on Wednesday, I have to go and pick George up from nursery and look after her until dinner time. So Wednesday, there's no choice, right? If I can do one task, basically, or one little bit of a project between 9 and 10 in the morning, and that's it. And Wednesdays are like that. But then Thursdays are completely different. And Thursdays are very free, and I have a whole afternoon where I can work on different things. That's kind of my management time in there. So I kind of stack up my tasks for a Thursday or a Tuesday, which is a little bit like that too. But Mondays I know are killer days and Wednesdays are killer days. Friday's pretty busy too. So getting the cadence of your week like that is, to be honest with you, Bradley, I think that's something that just comes with maturity and probably just age, that you know what days are going to be like. And I suppose the more you have a growing family and more responsibilities at work, the more constrained you become, and you just have to get over that hump of saying, well, I can't just stay up till 2 a.m. and brute force this. I have to structure my work better, and I have to make sure that I, you know, preserve time for other things and free time and so on.
So we've got capture everything, and we've got really clarify and organize, and then we've kind of talked about processing. So that's 1, 2, and 3. Number 4 is really where we kind of been alluding to this, just like reflect and get to work. This is where you're clarifying everything, pick off something you have the time and the energy for, and just do it. This is like where you're actually working. We always joke that we spend so much time with our systems that we actually don't get any work done. Like there are periods where you're just like, I have to do this. I have to read this book, or read this article, or write that article, or I have to grade that homework, or that I have to, have, you know, talk to so-and-so about something. It's just, this is where you do work. And it's kind of simple. Like, this is what we're used to. But again, it's sometimes like, as we said, being able to identify like when you're not going to be able to do something is fine. It's like, we do this in our home lives. Like if you had in your brain tonight, like, I was going to mow the grass, then you get home and one of your kids have to go to the doctor. Like, it's probably not happening. And you don't like stress about that. You just say, well, like, I have a kid sick. I can't do that. So yeah, there's that. So there, yeah. There's like, you know, 1 through 4. Last thing is, something I know is near and dear to your heart. And this is like the weekly or biweekly review. And so this is where you like review your system periodically to see like where you're at and to make decisions about things. So tell us about your kind of system for review.
So full confession. I mean, I probably did GTD for about 10 full years before I really got into the practice of having some kind of weekly review. And then after about 10 years, I got the idea and finally had, you know, the sense knocked into me to make this a regular thing in my life. And now what's happened is, you know, David Allen talks about GTD being almost like a martial art, okay? And what I kind of feel I've done, if this isn't too pretentious, is that I've kind of gone to the black belt, which is, instead of having a very rigidly defined weekly review, I am now able to deploy a review at any point in the week that I feel I need it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that like a weekly review or a full review of your system, if you like, rather than a weekly review, is, it's like a magic pill that takes away stress. And I know in my own mind and in my own body sometimes the feeling that I get when I haven't done that enough, and I can feel it building up, and I know that if I then do a review, I will feel 100 times better just for having done that review. So what the review is basically just taking an overview of every project in your system, and that may be a lot of projects, because one of the things about GTD is any outcome that you want that's more than one step becomes a project. So you shouldn't be afraid to make lots of small projects. But what you have to do if you are going to do that is you have to start getting into the review process. So for beginners, I would recommend having a regular time where you do a review. And that might be, you know, depending on the cadence of your week. Sunday night is a good time for me. I like to do it then. But also Thursday afternoons is a good time for me in my schedule. Other people like it first thing on a Monday morning, just whatever is necessary. But the review is basically go through all your projects and just make sure that they are still current and live. Because I've seen myself do that over time where I do all the things on a project. The project is finished, but I don't actually complete the project in my system. So checking that the projects are still valid. Sometimes circumstances have changed, which means the project has been put on hold. Somebody's gone off sick, so the project has to be paused for a week till they come back or something like that. But also, are there new projects or are there new wild ideas you want to bring in? Do you have well-defined next actions on every project? Do you have some projects where there are no next actions? That's maybe something to look at. So that's what the review basically is. And it's not about processing. The review is about looking at. And this is something that I really didn't do a very good job of for many, many years in GTD, was that when I wanted to review, I would force myself to clear every inbox in my life and then do the review, by which time I was completely mentally exhausted. And what I've been able to do over recent years is to separate out the idea of reviewing from processing. And it's not, I don't look at it as one whole process anymore. Processing happens at one point, reviewing happens separately, and reviewing is just reviewing. It's not anything else. So I don't have to have all my inboxes at zero before I can start a review, because if you do that, you will probably never have the circumstances to start a review. But what I do in OmniFocus is, again, the app I use as well, you can set every project to be reviewed on a certain frequency. So what I have in my system is for almost all my projects, all my active projects anyway, I have them set to be reviewed every day. Now, you may think this is insane, but if you think back to what I just said about being able to tactically deploy a review at any point in my week where I'm feeling stressed, that's great, because when you go into the review perspective in OmniFocus, what you see is all the projects are due to be reviewed. So that works great for me, because at any point of any day, I can dive into that perspective and just quickly go through and just see, is everything still okay? And then I feel great again after that. So the review is it's a critical skill in GTD. Perhaps I think the hardest to really get doing well, and certainly the easiest to skip when things get busy. But what I realize is that often you're sort of too busy not to review. That's kind of the way I look at it now. And because I can do it so quickly, and I can do it at any time, and I can do it from my phone anywhere, that the review can happen almost at any time that suits. And it's like a superpower at work. It really is.
Yeah, there'll be times like, you know, I may feel a little stressed out, but then if I do a review, I may realize I have no reason to be stressed out, like take a chill pill. And then I also, like, there are a lot of times I may do like an impromptu review. Let's say I'm up working late at night and have like a burst of energy. It's like, hey, I have some free time. I have some energy. Like, let's knock out some stuff for the future. I may do a review and see if there are things coming up with start dates in the next few weeks that I can knock out now. Let's go ahead and knock them out.
Yep. And that's something that I think as life has gotten busier and family and work life has gotten harder, harder is putting it too strongly, but I'm having to look further ahead as well. And, you know, when I was, you know, 20 or 29, I would work sort of, you know, this week in my calendar, do the weekend, and then Sunday night I'd look at the next week. But now I'm looking at, like, by Wednesday, I'm there looking at the next Friday and saying what has to be done by then. And that's something that's starting to come into my system as well, is a much longer perspective on when things are due and what's coming up in the calendar, and how do I get ready for things that are coming further away.
So this is really a high-level overview of GTD. Like, obviously, we're not going to be able to cover in 20 minutes, like, this whole system. I encourage you to check out the books, read the audiobook or one of those countless blogs on the internet. Overall, like, my biggest single love of this, it allows me to trust a system to inform me of future tasks, but allow me to forget them today. Like, that kind of sums up my love of it. You know, unlike a computer, like, we can add more RAM, you know, more memory to our brains, like more RAM. So I free up like RAM so I can think more. And sometimes it's to think less. Like, it's to be able to put things out of my brain and just not have to stress and worry about it. And one of the things I do want to clarify, we talk about inbox zero, particularly when this comes to email. And Merlin Mann is a kind of big inbox zero guy, and I'll have a link to a really great talk he did at Google back in, I guess it was 07. Mm-hmm. Inbox zero is not about answering all your email. Inbox zero is about getting it organized. So it could be it's process, delete, answer, and file away. I know that, like, Fraser, this is why you're big on not using like one of those snooze clients for email, correct?
Yeah, so many clients, that are, particularly in iOS now, they're offering you the ability to basically take an email and then get rid of it out of your inbox and guarantee that it will come back at another time. But for me, that's what that does is that breaks your trusted system, right? If you really have a trusted system in OmniFocus, then the key feature you want from an email client is I can take text from this client and I can send it to OmniFocus, and then I can just archive the message. So that's kind of what I think about snoozing, is that you're taking something, there's something out there in the world, and it's not in your OmniFocus or your Wunderlist or whatever system you're using. There's stuff in your email and there's stuff in your system. And unless you have something that ties up the two things together, I'm pretty unhappy about using something like that. The only exception I usually make is for things like an electronic ticket for something, where you really won't use it until the day you go. Like, you get a cinema ticket or something and it's in your email, and then you're going in 2 days' time. I quite like snoozing for that kind of thing, but otherwise I'll tend to use other things for that now, including converting it to PDF and then saving the PDF in OmniFocus, for example, which is another way to do that. So snoozing is kind of like, you'd really need to be doing GTD, but you're kind of doing it half-hearted in your email, but not for your whole life. And for me, that's the kind of holistic nature of that is really important.
So sounds good. That's a great way to put it. And we'll have a link to that YouTube video in the show notes. It is absolutely fantastic. And so again, remember this: process, delete, answer, file away. And then one of the biggest things for me has often been delete. Like, sometimes you just you have to like decide to yourself, I'm not going to deal with this, and delete it. And so we'll kind of end it there as a terms as for a GTD overview. Again, this is finishing up episode 200 of Out of School. And then next week, we're going to have an episode where we just talk about how this might apply to teachers. And obviously, every teacher has their own style and their own workflows, but just want to kind of, you know, get into the nitty-gritty of how teachers might apply this. So thanks for everybody for listening today. You can find us on iTunes at itunes.com/out of school. You can connect with me on Twitter at Bradley Chambers and on the web, chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I am Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.